We are here for episode 8 of What We Watch When We Drink.
That's unbelievable. We've just doubled our run. We were supposed to be done at episode 4.
We were canceled long ago. Now we're just doing it for fun.
Yeah, we just ignore the cancellation notices.
Like the cease and desist and like the summons, we just ignore them. Hello? Hello?
Dave's not here.
Hey, should I roll the credits? And I can tell where we're at? All right, let's roll the credits. Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a booze dancing media podcast featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy libations. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. In addition to all that, you can just listen to us on boozedancing.com, and if you have any questions, comments, snide remarks, love letters, we'll take them all. Email us at boozedancing@gmail.com.
We're not picky.
No. Picky. We're desperate.
You can review us on Yelp if you want. We have curbside service.
Do we?
Sure. Why not?
We're like Chick-fil-A. Do we have an app yet?
Why not? Sure.
Hey, by the way, the app for Chick-fil-A and the curbside service, excellent.
Not a big fan of the Chick-fil-A.
No?
That's another episode.
For political reasons, or just you don't like to check?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's overrated. Much like In-N-Out.
So we just cut two sponsors off. Okay, fine. All right, whatever. That's how we're gonna be.
But, you know, right,
whatever.
We're just going for the big play. You know who we really want.
Don't forget HBO to mention Max. Robinhood Brokerage, the unofficial online brokerage of boozedancing.com.
That would be BZD is trading at about 50 cents a share right now. So
well, you short it. Go to Robinhood and see if you can get in early and screw the hedge fund guys.
Yeah, 85% right. Of our stock's been shorted, so please bid us up, please. That's what they're going for.
We don't really have a theme tonight, do we, with the drinks?
We are themeless, and we are seamless.
It's a potluck.
And we're sponsorless.
Did we are sponsorless. That? Although, you know, when you're looking for games, go to GameStop, the unofficial game store of boozedancing.com.
All right, what are we drinking?
I'm drinking the last of a Black Snake, and it's fantastic. It's a Glass Revolution USA exclusive from Blackadder. It's their Black Snake. It's vat number 6, the third venom, and it was picked out by our friend Raj. Whiskey not with a 5, but with a 6.
With a 6.
Those are inspired six. Spirits from Mr. Raj.
I have the Tin Cup Rye because A, I like the bottle. B, I like the whiskey. And, well, I like the whiskey. So I'm going to pour some. What do you got there, Mr. Krause?
I am drinking 19-year-old Ardbeg, the train bomb.
Nice. Gentlemen, cheers to episode 8. Cheers to us.
Beautiful. All right, that's beautiful. Good enough. So let's talk about what we've watched recently.
How much time you got?
Well, how much time do you got? For 2 weeks, how much TV can you have watched in 2 weeks?
You'd be surprised.
The two of you just give me homework. I told you before, this is like doing a film class.
Mike, we're all doing school from home now.
I just want to know, does Booze Dancing grant an MFA? Will there be a degree? Yes.
Well, the MF, sure. But not
we're all a bunch of MFers in here.
All right, Angie, go. Start. What have you been watching?
Oh, I've watched a lot of stuff. Well, we really haven't done the rundown in a while because we've had special guests and we've had theme shows for Burns Night. This is pretty much going to cover like the end of the holidays, the beginning of January. There's a lot. So you had recommended The Baker and the Beauty, and I finished the first season, and it was a delightfully charming show. That was really good. I liked him. He was great. The family was great. I mean, the girl was okay, but everybody else was really fantastic. I liked the dad, too. The dad was good.
Oh, the dad's good. Yeah, he's fun.
Yeah, he was a good time.
You mean the dad of the son, of the guy?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, the dad of the... The dad of the girl's not in it yet, is she?
No, I haven't seen.
No, he's the next season, I think.
What's her manager's name? What's his name? I can't remember his name.
I don't remember.
He's great.
He pops up in all kinds of shows. He's
right, because there's only 12 actors in Israel. We've established this, right?
Yes, we have.
They call them the Dirty Dozen.
They are the Dirty Dozen of Israeli TV.
Well, it's all the sand. It's dry. There's not a lot of water there. So, you know, apparently it was dirty.
I still think it's – I like that show a lot, too. I think 3 seasons I watched them all. The American version lasted 1 season. Last year, and it's gone already. They couldn't convert it to an American audience very well. And I thought the premise is actually kind of universal.
What do you think the issue was? Was it casting or production quality? Or
I knew of the American show, but I didn't when it was out. But I didn't know what the about the Israeli show. So it looked like just your basic ABC sitcom. You know, right. It didn't look exciting. I don't know. It just didn't look like a show I would ever watch. It's network TV. I wouldn't probably put something on network TV. And apparently I wasn't the only one.
Yeah, nobody else did either.
What else?
All right, I'll save the two biggies for the end. I'll breeze through the little stuff that I've been watching. So finish Cobra Kai season 3. And Mike, you can chime in on that in a bit. Watch the Night Stalker documentary on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. I want to watch that.
Yeah, but that was actually really good because there have been a few that I've been trying to watch, but they get a little too dry. This was good because it focused more on the cops,
right?
And the actual investigation.
Part. Yeah,
and they were actually really good. They were great.
I think everyone's pretty much still around.
Yeah. They had both of them. There was I forget the names of the cops, but it was just funny because there was like a younger Mexican American who was he was a police officer and then he promoted into a homicide. And, you know, there's another guy who I think also caught the Hillside Strangler. Was he also L.A.?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was the same.
If you want to be a serial killer, you go where it's warm. I mean, it makes
sense.
Well,
you know, it's star quality, man. You know, everything. L.A. is a magnet for everything. It was just funny. Like, you listen to the one guy the cop that he was paired up with, the guy that got the Hillside Strangler, was apparently a legend in the department. And the way he's talking about him goes, yeah. And he takes me out to dinner to this Italian restaurant in Chinatown. And I get this big plate of like chicken parmesan. And I don't know what the hell I'm eating, but it's whatever his name is. And I'm like, oh my God, he wants me to work with him. It was really good. And, you know, they focused on his wife and how, you know, once it broke in the news, the cops were pretty much under fire then. And they were all kind of worried about being targeted. So, you know, the wives were all freaked out and they're like, all right, listen, I'm staying out of town. But it was really good. That was actually really, really well done. I wasn't even going to watch it, but I was like washing dishes and my wife has it on. I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds pretty good. So next thing you know, you sit down and you're watching like 4 episodes. Let me see. We finished that. Then there is Your Honor, which is still going on Showtime.
That's still on?
It's like 10 episodes. I don't know how they're going
to. I didn't realize it was a weekly thing.
Yeah, it's weekly and they took a week off. So now I'm like, God, can we end this? I don't know. It's a tough one, but we're at the point.
No.
Yeah, but you know, we're at the point where like we're halfway through. I want to see how this ends.
And then say no.
And then say no. And plus, you know, it's the kind of thing where we're both, it's funny because we sit there and we watch the show and, you know, like they're going to say a line and either I call it or my wife calls it and we're just, you know, high-fiving. I was 3 for 3 one night. I think you know the basic premise, right?
Yeah.
Bryan Cranston's a judge and his son kills a boy riding a motorcycle. Turns out the boy is the mobster's son. And the father finds out who he wound up killing. And it's like, we're going to cover this up because otherwise we're all dead. And then, of course, I'll just give you one little twist. The boy winds up kind of becoming friends with the mobster's daughter. And they kind of start having a little relationship going. So it's just, it's unbelievably convoluted. So anyway, the point is, I got to see it through. Oh, we started watching Dark, which is a German show. It's sort of like a Stranger Things.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah, it was. It's pretty good. The first 4 episodes were really, really interesting.
Is that on HBO Max?
No, it's on Netflix. they've got, I think it's 3 or 4 seasons, and it's on Netflix. And it's pretty good. Obviously, it's all in German. It's very serious, but it's interesting.
German.
There's time travel, and there's cops, and there's disappearing kids, and all this crazy stuff. Nuclear power plant. They referenced Chernobyl a few times. It's dark.
So it's a laugh riot. It's a comedy, German comedy.
No, but it's pretty well done, and we're pretty.
It's a German comedy. That's what I'm saying. It's a German comedy.
The Germans are known for the comedy. Yeah.
Oh, so funny!
I forgot to laugh. What else we got here? But the two biggies that I watched that I really really liked was three. I'm sorry, Lupin, which was the French heist show with who's the guy's name? Omar Sy.
Yes.
Is he the actor, the lead actor in the show?
Yeah.
That was a really good show. And we could talk about it more. I'm just going to give the rundown. I watched 2 seasons of Warrior, which is on
HBO Max.
Yeah. And that was
future sponsor of Booze Dancing.
God, I hope so. And that was quite excellent. And then there is Bridgerton, which we could talk to in detail.
There is Bridgerton.
So how about you guys?
Mike, go ahead.
I saw the first episode of Batwoman. because I have kids that like to watch Batwoman. Ruby Rose was Batwoman, and apparently when she broke her neck last year, she decided she did not want to be an action hero anymore. Begged off the episode. She said, I don't want to be the star of the show anymore. So they had to introduce a whole new person to take up the Batwoman mantle. So it was kind of interesting how they wove the plot line to bring in a new person. And Javicia Leslie is the person that took over.
Who?
Did a very admirable role in the first episode. It'd be interesting to see where this goes.
What was the name again?
Javicia Leslie. She's 33. Let's see. On the wiki page, she's a Hampton University grad and went to some productions of Seven Guitars for Colored Girls in Chicago. So she's been in some stuff. They found her and put her in this. So we watched the entire season of Bridgerton, the 8 episodes, just because once my wife gets hooked on something, we have to watch the whole thing. Now she sits there and she says, what are we going to watch? So I have to go to the volume, the tome that the two of you have passed along. The 65 shows I've fallen behind on.
Uh-huh.
To go and see what's next.
Will she watch a show with subtitles?
I don't know if she'll like that. I will watch a show with subtitles, but I don't know if she will. She might find that a little too much because she's got to pay attention and read. So it might be too much for her to do. It's crazy. Crazy, I tell you.
Let's see. For me, I've got only a couple, and you guys mentioned a couple already. Lupin, also. I watched that one complete. And I finished season 3 of Gamora, which just came on to HBO Max. Maybe I'll talk about that one first because I don't think you guys have seen that. Ange, I think you said you saw the first season.
I saw the first season, and it's gritty. It's a gritty show.
Series, Italian street gangs in
Naples. No, this is not street gangs. This is the Camorra.
But you guys,
the Neapolitan mafia.
Yeah, this is the mafia that makes the Sicilian mafia go, we want no parts of you.
it's an Italian series, so it's in Italian, speaking of subtitles, and it's dark, and there's a lot of killing. A fair amount of killing.
There's a lot of murder.
Familial, very familial, not in the Godfather kind of way. I loved them. Loved him. This is crazy.
Well, we talked about this briefly before, I think. It was based on a book by a guy named Roberto Saviano.
That sounds right.
And the book was called Gomorrah, because I guess it's like, a play on Gomorrah. So it's like Sodom and Gomorrah in Naples. And he apparently has been in hiding for like 15 years because of this book.
Because he read the book. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Because, they were just after him. It's a whole expose. There was a film, actually, called Gomorrah First, and I think that's a couple hours. I think it was on Netflix for a while, then it was on Prime. Now I think it's only on Criterion.
But does it have the original characters in it as well?
I don't know. I didn't see it. I have no idea. It's based on the book, so who knows?
So it was gone for a couple. It was out 2 seasons on whatever channel it got put on here, and then no more. Thought okay, I think it was 2014, 2016, or when those 2 seasons came out. Made its way to the U.S., and then it's done. And it didn't really have an ending to it, per se, right? It felt like it was an unfinished work. And then, out of the blue, I saw that season 3 came out. And it came to HBO Max. And so I was like, and it wasn't like 7 episodes. It's like 13 episodes. Okay. And again, more grittiness and ongoing with the characters and getting more into the system, the Kamara system. And I just finished it a day or two ago, and I really enjoyed it. And I think that season 4 is coming. I think it's already been out in Italy, but it hasn't got to the US yet. Highly recommend it. The music's great. It's dark. It's an unsexy show. It's very male. Although there are some women in the show too. I really enjoyed it. The other one was, which we can go back to, is Lupin. I watched all that probably in a weekend, I want to say.
Yeah, I watched it over like 2 or 3 nights. Me and my son watched it.
Yeah.
And I was watching it.
It's what, 5 episodes at this point, right?
Yeah. What's good, it was probably on French TV, so it probably had ads. So the episodes are pretty short. Maybe they try to squeeze it into an hour. So they're like 45 minutes each.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty easy watch. The show moves really fast. The lead is great. He's really, really good. He's like, I think I said it before. He's like the French Idris Elba. He's got a lot of like charisma, and he's just really, really good.
And it's like a Thomas Crown Affair, James Bondish kind of guy,
yeah,
right?
The way kinda.
He's doing what he's doing, right?
Yeah,
it's a sleek like heist kind of thing.
He's like a heist, a master of the skies. Yeah. He's like running all kinds of scams and cons.
It's based on some French books about this character named Arsène Lupin, right?
Arsène Lupin.
And who's a gentleman thief. He's a thief. He can, like you said, master of disguise and very intelligent. And it's all wrapped around his father being, he believes his father, the main character, his father being innocent of a crime that he was allegedly convicted of stealing a Marie Antoinette's necklace. And he's come back to figure out the crime and figure it out and get his father's name cleared.
And exact his revenge.
And exact his revenge on that.
In a very cool and very calculated way.
Yes, he's got a backstory, of course, and
there's like hundreds. There's a backstory for every single character, yes. But it's done really well. And what I really, really liked about it too is even like when it's him as a young man, when he's a kid, I thought that was done really well too.
The actors who play the young version of him and the young version of his
wife or girlfriend, whatever she is.
Yes, and the other girl.
Right, the
necklace owner.
Yeah, right. The bad guy's daughter.
Bad guy's daughter. They all are great. I mean, you can imagine a series of just these young kids, these teenagers, you know, by themselves. So I'm not sure when that's coming back. I don't know.
I think I heard over the summer.
Summer. But you can see this kind of going forward as a series if they want to continue it, because they could use the books as a starting point to, you know, for other capers, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. It was really, really good.
And I didn't actually, to be honest with you, I did not think I would like it because of the French. Mm-hmm. And not the French people, the French language.
No, come on.
Please, cards and letters, West Coast office.
West Coast office. I was not excited about listening to French for 4 hours or whatever it was. or French people going, whoa. But it was really good. I liked it, and now I'm okay with the French language. Okay,
I'm telling you, it's good stuff, man. It's good stuff.
To Mr. French Toast over there.
Do
you want to talk about the other one, which was the bigger one, was Bridgerton, right?
Bridgerton.
Yeah, Bridgerton was really, really fun. I thought it was really, really good. First of all, it was beautiful to watch. You know, they obviously spent a lot of money. Remember, I think we talked about way back in the day when we did our origin stories about Carol Burnett show.
Yep,
and how you said it was just
having Bob Mackie do all the costumes.
I don't think they spent so much on sets because I'm assuming they used real estates to film the show.
Yeah, they probably just went and reused all those. But the costumes and the 40-piece orchestra or whatever she had there, you know, put Carol Burnett out of business. You know, you're not going to do that show ever again. And this was beautiful. The wigs involved were just crazy, and what they did with the Queen of England.
She was great.
Monstrosities that she was wearing.
And you know, it's funny because I forget who I was talking to about it. And they're like, we're watching it. And they thought it was, who was the woman on Saturday Night Live? What is her name? I can't think of her name now. She was on that show.
They thought it was a woman from Saturday Night Live? I thought it was Wanda Sykes.
No, I didn't think it was Wanda Sykes.
She looks to me like, her name is Golda Rushfeld or something. She looks like, to me, she looks a little bit like Wanda Sykes. Some of the facial gestures anyway. Do you think she looks like Maya Rudolph?
Yes. For a second there, I thought it was Maya Rudolph.
Yeah,
but obviously it was not Maya Rudolph. But I thought it was really. I like the cast. I like the who was the woman that was the Duke's, I guess not sponsor, but if you want to call her his aunt,
Lady Danbury.
Yeah, she was great. She was fantastic. I thought she was really good. I mean, the whole Bridgerton clan was great. It was just a fun show.
All the casting is really well done. And when you see something from Shonda Rhimes, that's the thing. That's the takeaway. Is that she finds a lot of people who maybe you don't know as like a household name, but she finds really talented actors and actresses, and she doesn't hesitate to bring them in.
I believe I saw somewhere that it's one of the most watched shows or downloaded shows at the moment, and I'm guessing ABC might be
they're kicking themselves for letting Shonda go.
This world she's created, this multicultural world. Yeah. in the 17th century, 18th century.
I think it was like early
1800s. It's 1813, I think, is when it's taken place.
Okay. It's pretty unique. And I'm guessing after a while, you don't even think about it, right?
No.
And the characters don't think about it. They say nothing. No one pays any attention.
I thought it was really, really well done. Great cast. I think it moved really well. The dialogue, it was funny. There was a lot of funny scenes.
For
a lot of sympathetic characters.
For about a week, I think Lupin was ahead of it for being the most watched. And then by the end of the month, they had retaken it. I think the number was like 86 million households have watched it.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is insane. The number of people. That's just crazy.
Both of those shows I had not heard of before they came out.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. I saw an article about Lupin in the newspaper, or I'm not sure where they, or maybe it just showed up in the, you know, what's new on the Netflix app.
On the Netflix.
Before you know it, it's like you hear about them everywhere.
Yeah, that was great.
It's been incredible how much buzz both of those shows have gotten, and people just picked up on them both.
And I think it was deserved. I think it was well deserved, and it was, you know, it was well worth the time.
And Bridgerton is a series of novels by a romance novelist that they've been out for years. And, you know, I don't read romance novels. Well, I don't read at all because, you know, I can't, but that's a whole different story.
And how are your thumbs these days? Are they opposable?
Barely opposable. It's like a monkey paw just tapping away on the computer. Anyway,
do you play for the New York Mets, the unofficial baseball team of BlueDancing.com?
Mongo-like candy. The woman who wrote the books, she said that Shonda didn't bring enough reading material for herself on vacation. And basically picked up one of these books and then enjoyed it so much, or was so well written, that she then optioned it to be Bridgerton.
That's interesting.
Which is like, you know, never would have happened if she had enough reading material.
But so Shonda Rhimes is like the... She's like a Reddit investor of intellectual property.
Funny. Reddit, the social media, the unofficial social media.
Sponsor of BlueDancing.com.
I will say that I am looking forward to season 2. And I think they focus on the brother in season 2.
Yeah, I think each of the books takes on a character of each of the kids. There's 8 kids.
Right. And they were named alphabetically, right?
Yes.
So the oldest is A.
Anthony, Benedict, Colin, Daphne, Eloise, Francesca. Okay. Gregory and Hyacinth.
The only thing that's like really kind of disturbing is when you start looking up the actors and you realize and you find out how old they are.
They're supposed to have it coming out at 16 or 18, whenever society is then. And all these women are in their 30s, which is...
Yeah. The girl from the Derby Girls.
Right. She's 34.
Yeah.
Or 36. I was like, what? She looks like she's 12.
She's 16 in that Derby Girls show. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's hysterical. Hey, you know, that's acting, man. That's called selling it. But yes, great show. Aaron, get back on it.
I will. I'm going to jump back on it. It's on my list. So are we ready to pour some more whiskey?
I have one more show that I watched.
Oh, go for it. Then we'll
We could pour more whiskey. You could, by all means, go ahead and drink. Don't hold up on me, man. It's all about drinking. Remember, it's what we watch while we drink, or what we drink.
A long podcast.
Nah, it's okay.
Like the cream.
But I finished Warrior season 2, and that was really good. That was really good. The last five or six episodes of season 2 were like, oh my God, they just put the pedal to the metal and it was like foot to the floor the whole way.
So
it was insanity.
Because you told me about it and I know a very little about it, where it's from, except that it's on HBO Max.
So the show is apparently it was based upon stories by Bruce Lee that his daughter found. Shannon Lee, I think, is his daughter. And she is pretty much the guardian of the Lee estate. So she's kind of overseeing everything. And she found some scripts or some stories. And apparently it was the stuff of legend. And I think it was what he was proposing when the whole Kung Fu thing came out. But this was like the 70s. And they're like, no, we're not going to have a Chinese man leading a show on primetime television. And I actually watched an interview today with the three showrunners of this one. It's this guy, Justin Lin, who did, he handled a lot of the Fast and the Furious movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shannon Lee, which is Bruce Lee's daughter, and this guy, Jonathan Tropper. He also did Banshee. And I think he's also a novelist. So he's written like 4 or 5 books and had a couple of them made films. But yeah, it was interesting because he wanted to do it back in the 70s, but Lee's daughter was saying there's no way they could have made it like this then. A, the production value, and then the violence, and just trying to make it a little more modern. It just wouldn't have been acceptable then. So it was really, really neat. And it touches on a lot of things because it takes place in San Francisco in the late 1800s. So you've got the building of San Francisco and like the railways and I guess the trolley cars and all that. And there's all this like demand for labor. So there's the whole big Irish population. And of course, they have the jobs. But then, of course, what does everybody do in this country? What do? You bring in cheaper labor. So they bring in all these Chinese to come in and do the work. So, of course, the Irish are pissed off. You know, and then you've got the Chinese gangs. There's about three or four rival gangs, all the Tongs in Chinatown, battling over the opium trade. And then you've got all these also Chinese workers coming in for these jobs. And the Irish are pissed off. And it's just insanity. It's absolute insanity. But there were parts where I thought that the stories were a little long and slow, but they were just kind of building up to the end.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's kind of like everything else. So you've got all these moving parts and they're kind of putting everything into place. But the payoff is huge. The payoff at the end is just really, really huge. So I would say it's a really fun show. Don't watch it with the kids, Mike.
Yeah, I saw the one part when they come off the boat.
Yeah.
And the Irish are hassling them. And he just tunes these guys.
he's really good.
You asked for it.
He's great. And it's kind of cool. What's really neat, too, is the way they've done it is sort of like in The Hunt for Red October, you know, like when they're all speaking Russian and then they transition to American. Right. So when the Chinese are speaking with the Americans, they've got like, you know, like English is their second language.
Right.
But when they're talking amongst themselves, they could all be like a bunch of guys from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know, no accents, nothing. They're all speaking like Americans. It's really neat the way they do it. It's a really good show.
Yeah. A little footnote to your to the Bruce Lee connection. I'm looking here on Wikipedia if you want to believe this. According to Bruce Lee's widow, Linda Lee Cadwell, Bruce Lee's concept was retooled and renamed originally Kung Fu with David Carradine cast in the lead role. And Warner Brothers didn't give him any credit. Warner Brothers stated that they had for some time developed an identical concept created by two writers. According to these sources, the reason Lee was not cast in part because of his ethnicity and also because of his thick accent. So that's when Shannon Lee, you know, ultimately took care of this. In 2015, she got together to put the series together for Cinemax.
Wait. You mean David Carradine's not Chinese?
Spoiler alert.
I thought he was from mainland China. He's not? Oh, interesting.
Actually, you know what's neat too? In both seasons, they have like two, like, I guess they call them a bottle episode where it's just, you know, just one little story.
Right.
So it's kind of cool. They have one where they're transporting a body from, I don't know, somewhere out west. I guess someone, they're taking a couple of Chinese immigrants that I guess died working the railroad and they were going to take their body back. I'm not going to spoil it, but then they wind up getting held up in this one town and it's just, I mean, just mayhem ensues. It's just unbelievable.
Are they coming back from Deadwood? Did Wu have something to do with it?
Maybe.
It was Wu, probably.
There may have been pigs. Probably. I think there may have been pigs. There's always pigs.
I said one, not two. Ian McShane just walked across the set.
It was good. It was great. It was great. And then there's a second one where there's this woman who runs this thing called the Barbary. Was it the Barbary Coast outside of San Francisco or something? Yep. And she runs like this ship where they hold all these like fights. And she's Mexican, and she's got this whole scenario where she drags the lead guy, the warrior guy, Assam. She says, listen, there's this place. You really want to make some money? Come with me to this town. I think it was probably somewhere in like Southern California. And this guy holds like this big, like kind of, you know, what do you want to call it? Like almost like, what's the WWE event, the big one?
Yeah. WrestleMania.
Yeah, like WrestleMania, but like for karate and boxing. And they bring all these people in.
The UFC fights.
Yeah, it's like a UFC fight. Exactly. It's like they go to Vegas and all the fighters come in and they just do like a round robin, you know, and then last man standing. But it turns out it's like a whole revenge thing and it's really good. It's just insane. So if you get a chance, watch the show.
With the kids, right? With the kids.
Always with the
family oriented.
You know what? Why don't you watch Banshee too?
It's from Disney.
Because you really need Amish selling meth. That's really, you know.
I need to go back to Banshee because I think I stopped after season three, but I need to go back to that.
Much like Banshee, what I love about it is everybody is in one way or another a badass. You know, everybody looks unassuming, but next thing you know, they're like, it's like swords are coming at you, knives and guns and hatchets and mallets. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
It's almost like in my house.
It's insanity. It's absolute insanity. Beheadings. It's just crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So anyway, watch the show.
That's why cool. I sleep with one eye open, man. You don't know what's going to go on.
Never know.
You've got, you know what you have in your house? You have the Kimura in your house.
I got some Nabla Dance.
She's a Kumara, right. And she's a Kimura. She's you're a Kimura,
right.
Kimura.
You're right.
Let's pour some whiskey.
Yeah.
Pour some whiskey. Raise a glass to some of the fine people that make whiskey.
Oh.
They do an outstanding job.
Cheers to them.
I am.
Oh, speaking of that.
I poured Ardbeg Black Committee Release.
Is it black or is it black?
It's black.
Is there no age statement?
They don't do that.
Do they do different casking or is it?
Oh, so this is the Ardbeg Day. Isn't this an Ardbeg Day one? Yeah, this is the one that came out for Fashil, right? So this one is like they use Pinot Noir casks from New Zealand, and there's a sheep. There's lots of sheep in New Zealand, yeah. And a lot of sheep on Isla.
New Zealand, where the men are men and the sheep are scared.
Well,
cards and letters, Gilo.
But this is the committee release, so this one's at 50% ABV. The non-committee release is like 46, I think. Or yeah, the non-committee releases are better, I think.
We had a whiskey called Sheep Dip.
Oh yeah.
Where they use the sheep extras to heat the barley.
Yeah.
So it supposedly imparts something different in there that they.
Wait, hold on a second. No, you're not thinking that's not sheep dip.
That's the one
you're thinking of the Iceland whiskey.
No, I'm thinking that the Iceland one.
That's the sheep dip one.
I can't think of this. What? Not sheep.
Loki.
Dip.
Loki.
The Floki. Floki.
Floki.
The Akavit is.
That was good. That was really good. The Akavit was good too. What the Brennivin?
Mm-hmm.
The Black Death.
That's good.
Both good.
Yeah.
Speaking
of, by the way, going back to the whiskey. So the rye, I think a lot of it is MGP.
Yes, it is.
And what's the big news this week? MGP picked up Luxco.
Just bought Luxco, yeah.
So what goes in that? That's going to be Yellowstone. What else did they get out of that deal?
Thanks.
And they got a couple of Kentucky places now, so they can actually say they have, I guess, bourbon. They
actually make
in
Kentucky,
And they have a tequila and something else out of that, too. So that gives them more than just making stuff in Indiana. You know, they're able to put more out. Because I wasn't aware that MGP actually had their own stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They make that, you said the Remus and something else.
Yeah, that was one of the ones they released, I think, wasn't it? Remember?
I didn't realize they did their own releases. But they, there's a lot of neat stuff that comes out of these mergers.
Luxco also has Ezra Books, Rebel Yell, Davies County, and Yellowstone.
Yep. Right.
So, and most importantly, Everclear.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's I was shocked they had Everclear.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
Always keep a bottle of Everclear around because you never know when you need to light a fire. It's great to start a fire in the backyard, you know, campfire. It's easy.
Huh.
Don't need a kindling. Just light it up, boys.
Excellent. Good to know.
Okay. Did we change drinks on there, boys? What are we drinking?
I'm still working on my Black Snake.
Got it.
Okay. I'm going to, right. I had a second tin cup. I think I'm going to go in for a Milam & Green rye, I think is also an MGP, correct? But they play around with it a little bit. They do it in port cask.
That we had a port cask one, right? MGP is like oil companies. We're always going to be needed.
They're like the Rockefellers of whiskey.
They are.
They're like Standard Oil.
That's right. We're going to be bigger than Standard Oil.
They're going to be bigger than Standard Oil.
They make a better product than Standard Oil.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm not drinking Standard Oil.
I hope not. I hope you're not.
I stopped drinking gasoline years ago.
Oh, man. Okay, other things that we're watching. I got to tell you, I started watching. I'm in the middle of it because it's interesting how they did this on Apple Plus. This is Losing Alice.
I think you mentioned this.
Israeli episode a couple weeks ago.
The Israeli Connection, episode 6.
It's for episode 6 of What We Watch When We Drink. Apple Plus show, and it started last Friday, and they released 3 episodes. So you could binge 3 episodes, And now it's weekly for the rest of the series. And I'm not sure how many episodes are to come. It stars Ayelette Zurer, who she's been in a lot of things.
Is she one of the Dirty Dozen?
Yes, but she's been in a lot of American shows too. She was the lead in the Israeli version of In Treatment. Right, she was the psychologist. Okay. Stitzel. She was in the first couple seasons of Stitzel, which is an Israeli show about an Orthodox religious family in Jerusalem. So she's in this show as a former film director, and she's on the not the tail end of her career, but she's sort of now a stay-at-home mom with her three daughters, and her husband's an actor, and some ingenue has a terrific script, and this studio is has signed off to make this script, make this into a movie, and they get our lead actress, Alice's husband, who's an actor, to be the main character. And it's sort of a dark sexual fantasy kind of movie. And the ingenue, we think, I'm only on episode 4, has some sort of dark goings on behind the scenes of trying to get involved with this couple, the director and the husband. I don't want to give away too much, but it's a kind of a thriller, and it's mostly about Alice, who I think what's going to happen is she's going to kind of lose herself in trying to make this movie. She's in her like 40s, and she's probably not sure where she is in life, and crossing some lines, you know, maybe in the movie making process, and with this young girl who's kind of loves her, kind of worships her, or so she says. It's really a very dark show out of Israel, which you don't really see. A lot of stuff you see is either you get the one you saw, Ange, the
Butcher of the Baker.
Yep.
The baker and the
or you get a war or you get a war thing. Okay. you don't get the psychodrama thriller thing.
So in Israeli shows it's make love or war.
Correct. Right.
Okay.
Yes. Not make psychodrama. Mm-hmm. So that's my on my current list. Guys, anything else that you are watching currently?
You know what I did go back and watch? Remember we talked about Local Hero in our
Yeah.
You watched it again? Yeah.
So I watched it like 2 weeks ago, and I couldn't find it at first. And of course, me being the cheap bastard that I am, I had to find a cheap option. I had to find a free option to watch it. Yeah. I refused to rent it. So if you look at Criterion Channel, they had it. They had like a Criterion Collection version. Now, if you're not familiar with the Criterion Channel, they've been kind of like mostly art house movies, mostly like a lot of restoration. They did a lot of that, like back when Laserdisc first came out.
Yeah.
They were like taking old movies and like restoring them, and they were doing like the director's commentary. Mm. Or if it was, you know, an older film, they would take like, I don't know, let's say Elvis Mitchell, who's like the film critic for the New York Times. They would have him like do a commentary, or if who else was famous? Like Pauline Kael, all those like older film critics. Sure, and they would do a commentary track.
Yeah.
Or maybe like Martin Scorsese will do a commentary track. But they do a lot of like film preservation. They do a lot of like art house movies and some smaller shows. So they have a Criterion Channel version of this. And if you want to go back and watch it again on there, you could watch it with, I think, who's the director? Bill Forsyth, I think his name is. And he'll do the commentary track and talk about the film and other
productions. Oh, nice. It's like getting the DVD.
Yeah,
it was neat. It was really good. It was kind of fun. I forgot how dry it is.
It is pretty dry.
You know, it's really, really dry, but it's just a really nice story. You know, and it's just a really nice story. It's really well made. I mean, it's just absolutely beautiful. Little seaside village in Scotland, you know, somewhere.
Did you look and see where it was being filmed at?
I think it's like up at, I don't know exactly what they had a few random locations, I think. But I think it's supposed to take place in the Highlands on like the western coast. And like some little, because they were supposed to, it's an oil company going right out there, and they're going to build a big refinery basically out there
and tap into
the oil in the North Sea.
Yeah.
But the guy who runs the oil company, Mr. Happer, who is played by Burt Lancaster, he is also a stargazer. So he sends Peter Riegert out, and his name is McIntyre on the show. And he's like, I'm not Scottish. So they send him out there to negotiate.
Is that Otter?
Yeah, it's Otto from Animal House.
Animal House, yeah.
And also he's in, what's that other movie, Crossing Delancey? Right, he's the pickle guy, Crossing Delancey. Who's the, is it
with,
Amy
with Irving? Amy Irving, yeah.
Right, who was Mrs. Spielberg at one point.
The first Mrs. Spielberg.
Right, yes. And then he got who, Kate Capshaw?
Kate Capshaw.
Okay, but we've digressed. So, yeah, again. So I know. Well, it's okay. So they send him out there to negotiate, and he's like a lonely guy. You know, he's doing pretty well, and he's driving a Porsche, and he's working for an oil company in Houston. So they send him out to Scotland to negotiate the buyout of the town. You know, and they've got a number in their head of what it's going to be. So he's got to meet with all the locals, and the locals know what's up.
They want a payday, too.
I forgot that Peter Capaldi's in it, and he's great. And he was, like, so young and so goofy. He was, like, something out of, like, a Monty Python. He was just such a goofball. Yeah. But he was great, you know, and he falls in love, and he meets somebody that he really likes. And that's the whole thing with the Northern Lights. And it's just a really, really fun movie. It's really good.
Yeah, it's a great movie. It's one of my favorites. It's such a fun trip. And I think I want to go watch it again because now, having been to Scotland a couple times, I want to see what Scotland is in film from before, you know,
right.
How it looks.
It's very laid back. It's very, you know, like a sleepy little town. It's good. It's a lot of fun. It's not
high drama. It's just good fun. Anything else, Mike?
Bridgerton was my big thing.
There's a couple shows that are on my to watch list. One, I actually kind of started watching it before we came on tonight. It's on HBO Max. It's called Possession. And
what is that?
Is it
a series or is it a movie?
It's a series. I think it's a short series. I think it's like 6 episodes. It's an Israeli-French connection, so to speak.
Wait, one question. Okay, so you've got 10 grand laying around and you could spend it on travel. Where do you go first? Scotland or Israel?
Scotland.
Okay, Scotland. Just checking. Yep. Just checking because we talk about both of them a lot. So yeah, just wonder where we go.
More bang for the buck, man. There's more
whiskey
too. Right?
A lot more whiskey.
More distilleries.
So it's a strange premise. Well, I should back up. So it's an Israeli French partnership to make this thing. And okay. I think it was based on a story too, a book. A girl who is French. She's getting married to an Israeli in Israel. So she is not a citizen of the country. And they have this big wedding, and her parents are French, and they're not really crazy about her getting married. It's a big Jewish wedding, and it's outside, and there's a big cake scene, a huge cake, and everyone's gathered around this huge cake, and she's got this huge knife, and she goes to cut the cake, and the lights all go out. The lights come on about 3 seconds later. This girl in her big white dress is holding this knife, and she's covered in blood, and her husband is laying on the ground covered in blood. And from what I gather, she is accused of murder. And but she's French, a French citizen in Israel. And so there's three languages going on in this thing. It's French, Hebrew, and English. And by the way, the dead husband is one of those Dirty Dozen actors. And
naturally.
Yeah. And so another psychodrama thriller where they have to follow her.
Wait, is it Zvika from The Butcher and the Baker? The Butcher and the Beauty?
No.
The Baker and the Beauty.
This guy
the
is
Butcher, the Baker, the Candlestick Baker.
This actor is in Mossad 101, and he's also in Valley of the Tears, which is on HBO Max. And so you follow, I guess you have to follow her story as she tries to get herself out of a murder charge while being in Israel. It looks, so far, the first 15 minutes, it caught me. So I think I'll stick with it.
It's called Possession.
That looks interesting to me is on Netflix. And I think it's the second season just came out. It's called Alice in Borderland. And it's Japanese. And it's about a group of kids. It's based on a manga series, I believe. It's about this one kid who gets lost in like Tokyo somewhere with his friends. It's kind of like a End of Civilization kind of thing. And they have to kind of find out how to get out of the city. But they have to kind of go through all these games to get themselves out. And they're like video games, I think.
So, you want to hear the tagline? A group of bored delinquents are transported to a parallel wasteland as part of a survival game.
There you go. So that looked interesting, and I'm going to check that one out.
Tao Tsuchiya, Nijiro Murakami.
Oh, these are the characters? Yeah. The actors?
Ayame Misaki. There you go. Risa Naka. There you go.
Do you think you pronounced any of those names correctly?
Absolutely not.
No. Just wondering.
Absolutely not. Do I ever?
I have two orders, though. Of one of them.
With a side of teriyaki chicken?
Please. Bento box.
Cards and letters. Cards and letters.
So those are my two that are on my current list of things to watch, aside from the things that I haven't finished that we've already talked about.
Stop adding things to my list.
No, the list keeps growing for us. It keeps growing.
That's all right. You got to do something. I mean, we're stuck at home. What is there to do?
I'm going to have to quit my job. I don't have time to watch all these shows.
You know, I'd like to quit my job and just watch all these shows.
There you go.
You know what we need? Amazing. You know what we need, though, right?
From the money to pay.
Win the
HBO Max.
HBO Max money.
They know where we are. They should.
They do. They know. They don't.
Why
know
wouldn't they? We're a chart topper.
We need some of that, the winnings from the GameStop lottery that's going on.
Damn right.
GameStop. Unofficial. Game.
So when they come back from the dead, they're going to be our unofficial official sponsor.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right.
You know what we're going to get? Shares of GameStop.
Yeah. At 3 cents a piece.
I'm also working at getting Sears and Woolworths sponsors as well. So we'll see how that works.
Good man. Good man. Scrape that bottom of that barrel.
1,000 shares of Montgomery Wards.
Last thing, you know what we're going to get? H&M green stamps.
Some green stamps. I would like green stamps. It seems like fun. Seems like a good idea.
I need a toaster. Speaking of dead things.
Nice segue.
We're going to add a new segment to this wonderful podcast. We're going to try to honor folks that might have passed away in the last since our last episode.
Can we call this the Departed?
We'll call it the Departed.
The Departed.
The Departed.
You got to go bad Boston accent. The Departed.
So the first on the list, maybe not a TV star in a traditional sense, is Henry Aaron, Hall of Fame baseball player. Hammer and Hank passed Babe Ruth for the home run.
Did they name the candy bar after him?
Oh, Henry. They did. So,
Was the Baby Ruth named after Babe Ruth?
It was.
No.
No? Is that not true?
To avoid paying Babe Ruth, they said they named it after Grover Cleveland's daughter named Ruth.
Oh, that's funny. That's true?
So, yeah.
You know, Mike is our Wikipedia.
He's our
Wikipedia. I'm a font of useless, truly useless knowledge.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. But if that knowledge gets us some sponsorships.
HBO Max.
HBO Max.
HBO Max.
He was one of my favorite baseball players when I was a kid, and having the same first name as his last name, my nickname for time in elementary school was Hank. My first glove was a Hank Aaron glove, and I just loved number 44. I only saw a few of his later years, but he was just a...
You saw him break Babe Ruth. That was something. Watching him run around
Dodgers.
Fulton County Stadium at the time, going around, right?
74. Next on the list, who passed away, I believe, last week, an icon and a caricature of himself, was Larry King. He was in everything. He was in Ghostbusters, and he had a long-running radio career, CNN for years. And I think he still lives on. If you turn your TV on right now, you can find him selling you something for your prostate or for your colon on...
Or a hearing aid.
Or a hearing aid.
Anything.
You know, at this point, I think I need all three. So I'm all in. So well, I'm going to go long on Larry King.
Yes. The great Larry King is gone. Notable for his story that he grew up with Sandy Koufax, which was not true. But he kept telling that story.
While we're doing this, I'm going to pour myself a little more Milam Green.
There you go. And I have a little bit more of this black.
Should we raise a glass to all of our honorees?
I think we should.
To all of our dearly departed.
The Departed.
The Departed.
There should be some sort of toast here, but we don't have one. So,
you know, here's the thing, though. I mean, while it's sad that they're all gone, they all had a damn good run.
And the next two folks are the same way. We talked about this because it does feel like there has been a significant amount of number of celebrity deaths in the last year. And there's already been a significant number this year, COVID-related, old age, whatever. And some great actors and actresses and people in the industry are leaving us. And it seems like one passes away, they get 24 hours of coverage, and the next day someone else passes away. So they don't have a whole lot of time to say goodbye to these folks.
Yeah.
A great actress, a comedian who passed away two days ago, Cloris Leachman.
Cloris Leachman has an Academy Award for The Last Picture Show, and she has 8 Emmy Awards, which ties her with Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Wow.
For the most acting Emmy Awards of anyone. She was nominated something like 20, 22 times. She was the Meryl Streep of the Emmy Awards, just getting nominated every time she took the stage. She stole the screen and she got nominated.
She was great.
At the end, she was on Malcolm in the Middle playing a grandmother.
And she had a career after, even after Malcolm in the Middle.
But I mean, but she was nominated for all these things. Like, it wasn't just that she was on just the Mary Tyler Moore Show or just Phyllis. She carried on forever.
And don't forget, you know, she was Gam Gam in Beer Fest.
She was Gam Gam. Kim Kim was a hooah.
A quote from someone about her and why she was such a great comedian is because she didn't play the character, whatever it was, for laughs. She played it very seriously.
She was all in
on the character. She wasn't playing as a spoofiness to it, all right? And she was just amazing. So cheers to Cloris Leachman. And just today, Cicely Tyson.
The autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman was the first thing I remember seeing her in. She was fantastic. And she was in Sounder, another Academy Award nominee, bunch of Emmy Awards. She's very talented. I believe she won a Grammy Award for one of the, maybe the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman. Very well honored, very well respected. And unlike a lot of actors and actresses who take jobs for money, she refused to do that, and she would only take jobs for the role. And she was one of the very first African-Americans who would say, look, we've done enough as the maid and the prostitute, and I want more. And demanded that she had a role that portrayed African-Americans in a more favorable light.
And I saw something that because of her staunchness in taking roles that were offered, a lot of roles she didn't want, she didn't have the largest resume because she said no a lot,
but she had enough nerve to say no and say, I'm not going to play a whore. I'm not going to play, you know, this ne'er to do. Well, you know, we've had enough of that. And I think she carried a lot of respect through the industry. She was married to Miles Davis, which is unbelievable. And, you know, just a really well-respected woman.
Yep. So cheers to all of these fine folks.
Hey, you know, they had full lives, 96 years old, both her and Cloris Leachman. So, you know, I wonder, well, I think we talked about this before we started. A, they all grew up during the Depression. They were all like children during the Depression. So that has to toughen you up. And B, they were all born right a little bit after the pandemic that happened 100 years ago. So maybe they're like, oh, this thing's coming around again. I'm done.
Check, please.
That's enough. I lived a full life. This is all good. I was here for the good times. This is it. I'm out.
I think you're right. You're seeing that whole era of folks, you know, getting up there. And they all came from that Depression era, and they were way tougher than a lot of the folks today, right?
You figure they went Depression, they went to World War II, they went through, you know, everything else, 50s, all the turmoil in the 60s and 70s. Yep. I mean, they've seen it all.
You know, someone passed survivors away in your neighborhood, not necessarily in Hollywood, but John Chaney, coach of
great Temple basketball coach.
89.
He coached at Cheney State before that.
Yep.
He was so within 2 months, you lost John Thompson, the great coach in the you know, 80s from Georgetown, and you lost John Chaney. And both coaches were the closers in the living room where they would go to your house and tell you that your kid will graduate. They'll play basketball, but your kid will graduate. Send them to my school, your kid will graduate. And they were more about shaping men than shaping basketball players. And Chaney, you know, he's revered. Guys that played for him, he would have practices at 6 o'clock in the morning because if I had practice at 6 o'clock in the morning, you couldn't be out at midnight. You just couldn't be. You know, you knew that if you showed up, you know, hungover from the night before, it was not going to go well. So he you know, and if we didn't play well, we would have more than one practice a day. And, you know, we're going to keep doing it until we do it right. And he sent a lot of guys to the pros. He went to five, I think, Elite Eights. Just a really great coach. And the Basketball Hall of Fame and the College Basketball Hall of Fame. Just a really great guy.
So we are going to keep doing this. We're going to honor these folks each show. Hopefully we won't have to do this very often. But we know the clock is ticking on a lot of folks, and we will.
Well, that's really happy.
We will honor them as they.
You know what? The clock is ticking on us now. We just made the list.
You should be writing a German, you know, comedy. That's boy, that's a lot of fun.
Dark. He's going to write the Departed Part Two. Can we get Scorsese for Departed Part Two?
I think he's well. We got to hurry.
I still think one of the best lines in that is, "Oh, I know you. I'm the guy doing my job. You're the other guy."
All right, guys. Our last segment is we had a whole episode about this movie that is not in public release yet, The Water of Life.
They're holding out for HBO Max money too.
Scotch whiskey.
I think they had hoped to release it at maybe Fajil or something last year, and unfortunately, with COVID, it shut everything down. So,
and this year too, I think, right?
They released it online, and I think they're looking for maybe a distributor or something else to roll it out with.
But it's actually not been released. It's released online. You could have bought tickets to see it, but they are looking for some wider release mechanism. It probably won't be a Netflix, Amazon Prime, or Amazon Video thing, because they don't want to get buried in the darkness of, you know, the 1,000 documentaries that are on each of those. Yeah. So they are looking at some other options. So we had we've all seen it, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
We just watched it on Burns Night.
I enjoyed it. I was a little surprised, I have to say. I did not realize it was going to be a bit of a love letter to Brooke Lotte and Jimmy.
Yeah. Instead of Burns Night, this should have been released on Valentine's Day.
That's really my only. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was really well done. I thought the interviews were really interesting and everybody was great, whether it was, you know, the writers or the distillers or the independent bottlers or everybody else. But again, the only thing was I just thought it was a little too Brooke Lotte heavy. Now, granted, that was probably the most compelling story.
I would have been fine if it was just a Brooke Lotte story.
Right. If it was billed as that.
I would have been, you know, I would have loved to have seen an hour and a half of Jim McEwen telling stories, and even Mark Grenier is involved, and Adam Hannett, to just let them chat about where Brooke Lotte was and where it went to under Renier, and then where they are today. The other part was about that is that it was also a love letter to Isla.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would like to see more of Isla.
Yeah. And that's fine for me because
it's fine for me too.
Yeah, Scotland is just fantastic, and Isla specifically is a place you want to go.
Yeah.
And I would have liked to have seen a little bit of time of them getting into Jim McEwen and just walking through the Rick House and saying, "This is ready. This isn't. This is ready. This isn't." And maybe discussing what they're looking for in a whiskey. You know, what makes this barrel okay? This barrel needs more time, because they showed a lot of pictures of him going in and pulling stuff out. But it'd be interesting to me anyway to see what makes today's whiskey versus this will be next week. This will be next year. This will be something we sell off to Gordon McPhail or someone else because it's not what we want.
Yeah. So there's a lot of footage that, you know, is not in this movie. I agree. And I think there would have been interesting to talk to the guys in the warehouse, the guys that are, you know, actually working with the barrels and working with the juice and how they are part of the process.
Well, maybe that was the beauty of using McEwen, because, you know, he basically said he worked his way up from like when he was 15.
Yeah, from a Cooper.
So maybe with him, you get kind of the whole picture. You know, you're starting out sweeping the floor in the warehouse to, you know, wheeling the barrels, to making the barrels, to tasting the whiskey, you know, all that stuff.
Well, and because it isn't a 100% Brooke Lotte story, you know, you have another half hour that you gotta, they spent on Waterford and Balvenie and David Stewart and Glasgow Distillers.
Glasgow Distillers, yeah.
So you had to cut some time out. I would have liked to see more Rachel Berry, but as a whole, I thought the movie was just spectacular. I mean, I really enjoyed hearing Mark Renier's version of things, of how it all started. You don't hear that too often.
The way it ended was very interesting.
And he...
Because you think that he was part of the sale. And then his story is, I was not. I went in one day and they said, hey, we're all out.
He was not happy.
What do you mean we're out?
Yeah. He was not happy. And it was interesting to see him not happy on film. And that was really... And you know, they even admitted, both of them, gentlemen, admitted that they butted heads. And but there was a bigger goal here. Yeah. And what they came together and made was bigger than the two of them. And Bruichladdich's an international success because of those two guys doing what they did in those 10 years, 10, 15 years.
10, 12 years, whatever. Cool. What I thought was interesting too is when Jim was talking about his backstory and going to Bowmore and basically working the floors and pushing the broom and everything. And at 22, the previous guy just gave him the keys and said, you're good to go. And then they made the point of showing Bruichladdich and the two young guys who had nothing to do and no jobs and no prospects. And he brought those two guys in. And then 12 years later went, here's the keys, fellas. I'm going to go. And it's just amazing to me that you could learn that much that quickly.
Well,
and have the distillery turned over to you where you're just like, wow, it's amazing.
I think it's interesting and not something you see today very often, right? Believing in that kid that comes in the door and says he needs a job and then giving him a job and then watching him grow and then, you know, maybe no formal education or not. And then boom, like you said, here are the keys. Yep. And they grow into the job, they grow into the culture, and then they create their own culture. And boom, you've got the success story.
Well, and the one guy saying, you know, when Jim left, he handed me the recipe for the Black Art.
Adam, yeah.
And I said, I don't want that. I don't want to make Jim's Black Art. I want to make my Black Art. So I'm going to put that off. I don't need that. I think he actually said he crumpled it up and threw it away, whether he did or not. You know, who knows? But because I don't want it to be, oh, they're still making Jim's Black Art. I want them to say they're making Black Art, you know, my way or differently or whatever, which was I thought it was really neat.
I've seen it twice, and I really would love to see a director's cut.
Of the 17 hours?
So it's going to be like Ridley Scott and Blade Runner or Francis Coppola with Apocalypse Now.
It's okay, just going to go 17 cuts. Right.
I want to see 100% of Bruichladdich. I want to see the things that they didn't put in. So they've been having these Zoom events around Burns Night and the release of the movie since last week. That was like 6 days in a row, I think. Today was the last one, and they had guests on every day. Everyone from every big name from the movie, Charles McClane, Dave Stewart, they were all in these Zooms. It was really fun because you could talk to them and chat and ask questions. They were all very personable and wonderful, and I got the sense that from the team of that Greg put together to make the film, this could be like a little cottage industry for them. They could keep making whiskey documentaries and probably enjoy it. The next one they're going to do is all about independent bottlers.
Yeah.
And they're going to highlight, I think, Gordon McPhail and Signatory.
And they mentioned that he had shot so much footage that he couldn't include it in the movie because it kind of took it off a different course.
Yeah.
And it would have been too long. So instead he's like, I'll just make another movie out of it.
They are whiskey geeks and they understand there's a niche out there that wants to see this stuff, but you got to tell a bigger story and try to tell it differently than all the other whiskey docs that we've seen before. I really hope they continue. I would love to see an Ardbeg documentary because that's got a fascinating backstory.
Well, they were closed for a while, weren't they?
They're mothballed. You could do a documentary just on mothballed distilleries.
Well, that was Brooklotti. They did Mothball.
And Brooklotti was Mothball too. You could just on all the ones you they never reopened, and there's whiskey still out there, or ones that are coming back, like Rosebank and Port Ellen and whatever.
I thought it was a little too Brooklotti heavy, on the flip side, what I really liked was, you know, they kind of reminded me of when they were releasing all that stuff they bought, all the old barrels, and how there was just like, there was like a release a week.
The Brooklotti story is fascinating.
Yeah.
The Mark Grenier and Jim McEwen love-hate relationship is Shakespearean almost. And it's definitely a story that you can tell.
He put the partners together to buy Brooklotti, and they sold it 15 years later for, you know, six times what he bought it for. And it sounded almost as if he had waited another year or another year and a half, he could have sold it for even more, because they mentioned the other, I think it was three distilleries sold for like $400 million or some crazy number, where you're just like, wow.
It's
amazing how the boom, you know, from going from basically shuttered warehouses where a guard would tell you just to, you know, bugger off, to being an up and running place and getting that much money, it's such a great story.
I think documentaries are really interesting because you get to tell a story about something very specific, but you also have to be careful with documentaries because it's a niche, right? And who's going to watch this story about this little food product, Scotch whiskey? So you got to tell a bigger story. And I think they are doing that in this. They are telling the bigger story.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's a story of big business, and it's a story of a little island, a touristy place, and what happens to that little island, and how this whole thing has gotten to be this global phenomenon of, you know, multi-billion-dollar industry. You can't be too niche because no one's going to watch it. And I think they do a good job of trying to make it the bigger story. I think Greg's vision is really good, and we like him, and we hope to have him back on the podcast to talk TV again and talk
absolutely
future stuff.
I think he would enjoy it.
And Brittany Curran too. Brittany, the executive producer and actress.
Think of what he said when he had him on. It's like, you know, it's kind of like you start shooting it, and the story starts to kind of tell itself, but the story becomes a little bit more.
It's focused on itself. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could see that he was a Brooklotti person before this, of course, right? But then when you start getting involved and you're talking to Jim, and Jim's personality takes over, and probably Mark's too.
By the way, Jim is the Idris Elba of the Scotch world.
He actually says that in the movie.
McEwen. Jim.
McEwen. James McEwen.
Yeah, I think the Brooklotti stuff took on its own life as he started interviewing and shooting and talking. But you could do a story about David Stewart at Balvenie. That's a whole story as well.
Just the story of Isla, where they'd had a lot of shuttered distilleries and people were all out of work, and Brooklotti comes in and they were able to hire back a lot of the people who'd worked there for years. And they, you know, the one farmer that they, Mark Grenier, made him grow, you know, barley, because I want stuff that's terroir. And he said, you know, I got two sons in the industry, and I got a daughter who's a brand ambassador. That it turned everything around for people of Isla. Just that alone is interesting. That you take something that we take for granted, and 30 years ago, it was almost a dead industry there. That there was nothing. There was no hope, and now there is.
I think Greg mentions this, and Jim McEwen's quotes. How does he want to be remembered? He wants to be remembered for creating all these jobs on Isla. It's an amazing legacy to say that's what you gave back to your neighborhood.
Yeah. And they've added, since Brooklotti reopened, they've added four more.
Yeah.
You know, so they're all over the place. And you got the Coopers and the peat cutters and the barley growers, and you know, and it just keeps expanding to the rest of the island. And the travel and tourism, where idiots like us go over there and drop US dollars, which they're hoping for.
One of the folks that gets interviewed in this documentary is Rachel McNeil, who I believe lives on Jura, but goes back and forth to Isla a lot. And she started a kind of an online school to learn about whiskey. She's just a wonderful woman and a very good friend.
Have you met her? Did she buy you drinks in Isla?
No, but I can tell a story about her if you'd like. She got my wife a...
You name-dropping son of a bitch.
She got my wife a piece of jewelry when I was there the first time.
And left
it for me to pick up at Balmore.
Nice.
Sorry. Yeah.
Of course she did.
And the question I wanted to ask her at the Zoom thing is, what's the effect on the island, Isla, with all these distilleries coming? And can the island support itself? Can the infrastructure support it all? And the tourism load that comes in and all the cars and all the people and then they're all gone. And there's been already some pushback over the two or three new distilleries that are coming online, Port Ellen and Ardenhoe, and I think Oliver Chilton's company. They're going to build a distillery. When is enough is enough? What's Isla going to be like in 5-10 years with what, 12 distilleries or whatever it's going to be?
Right.
It's only 3,000 people. Yes, it's jobs, but it brings, you know, if you put four dairies on the island, you're not going to have 50,000 people come to a dairy fair in the middle of the summer.
But you're making so much of that for export, not for Scotland now. To your point, is 12 the right number? Is 15 the right number? Is 20 the right number? At some point, there were, I don't know, 200 distilleries in Scotland.
Yeah.
And they got mothballed and shut down to 90 or whatever the number was. And now they're slowly creeping back up again. Are you going to be at that point again where there's kind of a glut? And there just isn't enough demand for all this because the next thing's tequila or mezcal or something else. And much like they touched on in the movie, Scotch became, it was your dad's drink. It's not cool anymore. We're not going to drink it. Does that happen again? And then everything kind of drops off.
The distilleries will survive. It's whether the island will survive.
Isla is 239.2 square miles, 3,000 something people on it.
So, and it's relatively rural. There's only a couple villages and they're not very big. And the folks are kind of scattered about, but there's only a couple big roads.
And it's a long time to get there, right? You were there. It's not like it's like driving, you know, around the corner. You got to make an effort to get there, right?
Impossible. From Glasgow, you can take a 20-minute flight and get there, or you take a 2-hour or whatever, an hour and a half ferry ride. So even though they're an island that's very close to the main island, it's still kind of far in a lot of ways. So I question the sustainability of these industries on the island. So I think we all liked the movie.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to, they got an ongoing marketing campaign that's going to be rolling out over the next few months as this thing kind of gets to a, some sort of wider distribution. So cheers to the Water of Life folks. We are fans and cheers to all the folks that put it together and the folks that were actually in the movie too. Boys, did we have anything else we wanted to?
That's all I got going. Wait, you know, here's a teaser. In 2 weeks is Valentine's Day. We should do the rom-com episode.
Oh, that's a great idea.
The Hallmark Movie Channel.
No, the rom-com episode.
Cheers, everyone. Right. Where are you going to find us?
All right, we are on Apple Podcasts, Google, Audible, Spotify, Stitcher, and of course, you could always listen to us on boozedancing.com. And again, if you have questions, comments, you know, love letters, angry letters, cards and letters, whatever, hit us up at boozedancing@gmail.com. We're here for you. All right, gents. Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
Cheers.